Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission is always the same. We take a dense, often complex source, say a lengthy legal ruling, and we strip away all the jargon.
Right.
The goal is to find the human drama, the surprising facts, and, you know, the ultimate wisdom that's hidden inside.
And today we are immersing ourselves in the high-stakes, low-drama world of strata schemes.
Yes.
We're looking at a 2025 decision from the Western Australian State Administrative Tribunal, and you can think of the tribunal as sort of the government body that steps in to resolve these petty property disputes that have, well, that have metastasized into full-blown warfare.
And this wasn't some big corporate litigation. This was pure neighbor versus neighbor conflict in a small 10-lot residential complex in Scarborough.
Exactly.
It involved a resident owner, Mrs. Crignell, against two non-resident owners, Ms. Cooper and Mrs. Beecham. And this case, which ended up needing a full tribunal hearing with sworn evidence, it just shows you how quickly these minor irritations...
Kind of parking, lease.
Text messages. How quickly they can escalate when, you know, basic goodwill just collapses.
It's really a masterclass in governance failure. Our deep dive is focused on four key areas of conflict, but the real takeaway for you listening is understanding the specific mechanisms the law provides for shared living.
And where those mechanisms just inevitably fail.
Mm.
So we're asking, what do these years-long skirmishes tell us about the limits of legal intervention in shared property? And maybe more importantly, how did internal politics end up resolving major breaches that the court itself was powerless to stop?
Well, let's start with the flashpoint that really defined the early years of this conflict, the caravan controversy.
Ah, this one is classic strata living. It all centered on alleged breaches of the bylaws.
Yeah.
The ones governing vehicles and the use of common property.
Right. Specifically, Ms. Crignell was accused of storing her caravan registration, NGN 131801, on the complex's common property.
And this had been going on since about 2019.
For years.
Yeah.
And the applicant's grievance was really rooted in, well, inequity. They argued the caravan was unsightly, that it was hurting the complex's aesthetics. But most importantly, that Ms. Crignell was using property jointly owned by all 10 lot owners.
And paid for by all 10.
And paid for by all 10 for her exclusive personal benefit.
And that really gets to the core of shared governance, doesn't it? If everyone owns it, how can one person just claim it?
Exactly. And this is where the legal structure of strata schemes sets a very, very high bar. To legally grant Mrs. Crignell exclusive use of that common land for her caravan.
The whole community had to agree.
The whole strata company, the collective body of all owners, they needed to pass what's called an exclusive use bylaw.
And what mechanism does that require?
It requires a resolution without dissent.
Okay, say more about that. Why is that specific term so important?
It's the highest voting bar possible. I mean, think about the implications. You are converting jointly owned land into the functional exclusive use of a single person.
You're changing everyone's property rights.
Precisely. Because this changes the rights of every single owner, the law demands unanimous consent. Not a majority, not 75%. Every owner must agree, and crucially, the resulting bylaw has to be formally registered.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, you can't be forced to give up your ownership rights to a bit of the driveway just because a few of your neighbors like the caravan owner.
Exactly. And in this case, no such resolution was ever passed or registered.
So how did Ms. Crignell try to defend her, what, 4 years of parking there?
Well, her defense was really based on a misunderstanding of the process. First, she argued the caravan was movable, temporary, not a permanent fixture, so she didn't think that rule even applied.
Okay.
Second, she relied on the fact that the Strata Council, that's the smaller managing committee, of which she was a member, had given her majority written approval in late 2023.
So she had permission from the people running the show, but not from the people who actually held the rights.
That is the crux of it. The tribunal found her understanding was, and I'm quoting, misguided. The duty of the strata company is to control and manage the common property for the benefit of all the owners.
All of them.
All of them. Council approval is simply not enough to override the fundamental rights of every owner to that common property. You needed the resolution without dissent.
So the tribunal declared Mrs. Crignell was definitely in breach from 2019 on.
Yeah.
But, and here's the twist that makes this case so illustrative.
Yeah.
Despite finding a clear breach, the tribunal issued no active enforcement order.
None.
Why did the legal system refuse to force her to move the caravan?
Because Ms. Crignell sold that specific caravan on September 19th, 2025. So by the time the tribunal delivered its formal decision a few months later, the subject of the dispute, that particular vehicle, NGN 131801, it was just gone.
So the legal issue became
theoretical or hypothetical. That's the phrase they use.
Meaning the tribunal couldn't issue an order for something that was no longer happening. They declared she had breached the law, but she didn't have to change her current behavior.
It was a successful legal finding.
That resulted in zero immediate impact.
A perfect legal victory and a hollow practical result.
So if the first conflict was about real estate and vehicles, the next battle was? Well, it's purely personal. Let's shift from property control to personality control in what the sources call the battle of behavior.
Right.
This involves alleged breaches of a bylaw that prohibits behaving or using language.
Yeah.
And this is key. Likely to cause offense or embarrassment.
And this is where you really see neighborly frustration just boil over into formal legal documentation. Mrs. Cooper's claims focused on two very different, highly charged incidents involving Mrs. Crooknell.
The first one is almost absurd in how mundane it is.
Yeah.
The rubbish incident.
Indeed. It started when Mrs. Cooper's housemate left a broken plastic crate sticking out of the recycling bin. When the housemate failed to break it down as they'd verbally agreed.
Which is annoying.
Very. Mrs. Crooknell, clearly frustrated, smashed the crate herself and then left the pieces at the bottom of the stairs leading up to Mrs. Cooper's lot 9.
And Ms. Cooper claimed this was offensive and threatening and actually cited it as a contributing factor to her housemate moving out.
Mm-hmm.
Because of anxiety. That's how fraught the environment was.
Then you have the second incident, a text message dispute over maintenance.
Ms. Crooknell, acting as the building manager, sent a text asking Mrs. Cooper to immediately dispose of some tree loppings that could blow around the complex.
A reasonable request.
A reasonable request, but Mrs. Cooper replied, calling the message passive-aggressive.
Which prompted Ms. Crooknell's infamous reply, which included the expletive bullshit and the use of capital letters, which the tribunal noted was like shouting in a text.
Right. And this is the most crucial segment for you, the listener, because it really illustrates the limits of legal intervention into just bad manners.
Yes.
Many of us would find being sworn at or having rubbish deliberately left at our door subjectively offensive. But the tribunal cannot enforce subjective offense.
So what was the test they had to apply? The test is objective. The bylaw requires that the behavior be reasonably likely to cause offense or embarrassment to a reasonable person in all the circumstances. The law has to look past personal feelings.
So how did the tribunal apply that standard to the smashed crate on the stairs?
They found her action was driven by frustration over Mrs. Cooper's housemate failing to clean up their own mess. A reasonable person, they found, would be frustrated and annoyed by her method, but they wouldn't necessarily take legal offense or embarrassment. It was uncivil.
But not a breach.
But not a breach.
And the bullshit text, that feels like a clearer violation of basic decorum.
The tribunal agreed that expletives and shouting cannot be condoned. But they looked at the immediate context. They found that Mr. Crooknell's reaction was understandable, given the passive-aggressive provocation she received first.
So because Mr. Cooper had essentially told the manager off for making a reasonable request,
the tribunal found that using expletives under that duress, driven by frustration over a legitimate issue, didn't meet the objective standard for a breach. It's an expensive lesson in context.
And the claims were dismissed.
Dismissed. Uncivil, but not legally actionable.
All right, let's pivot to segment 3. This one involves a legal mechanism that is fundamentally different from what we saw with the caravan. This is the short stay showdown, focusing on bylaw 15A.
Right, the bylaw that banned occupation of a lot for periods of less than 60 days.
In other words, no Airbnb.
No Airbnb. And Mrs. Crooknell was accused of running a short stay rental business from her lot 1 since 2021. She even conceded her average guest stay was about 4 nights.
So a clear violation of the 60-day minimum.
Hmm?
What was her defense here? She obviously knew the bylaw existed.
She tried a very clever, nuanced legal defense. She argued two things. First, she was only renting out a part of her lot, a single room, and she claimed the bylaw referred to the whole lot.
A technicality argument based on singular versus plural.
Precisely. And second, she stressed that it was hosted accommodation because she lived there and that it was registered as such with the city of Sterling.
Did the tribunal buy that technicality?
No, not at all. They rejected the part of lot defense entirely. They found the proper construction of bylaw 15A was intended to cover all or part of the lot.
And the city registration.
Irrelevant. You still have to comply with the rules of your private strata scheme. So Mrs. Crooknell was found in breach of bylaw 15A from 2021 until the rule changed.
Ah, and here we have the second major legal twist. Just like the caravan, it prevented any enforcement order. The issue was resolved internally, not by the court.
That's right. And this is another crucial point for you to compare with the caravan issue. The Strata company decided to change the law itself.
How?
At the 2025 annual general meeting, they passed a special resolution to repeal Bylaw 15A entirely.
Okay, what's the difference between a special resolution and the resolution without dissent we talked about for the caravan?
The difference is everything. For exclusive use of common property, like with the caravan, you need unanimity. The resolution without dissent.
Right.
But for changing a governance bylaw, like repealing a restriction on short stays, you just need a special resolution, which typically requires a 75% majority vote.
So the community decided to legalize short-term rentals. They voted 6 lots in favor, 1 against.
A much lower political threshold.
Yes.
And this action immediately rendered the applicant's legal challenge, which, remember, they were winning, completely moot. The tribunal made a formal declaration of the past breach.
But 0 active orders, because the rule Ms. Grugnell had been breaking no longer existed.
Exactly.
It's an incredible illustration of how a legal case can just be superseded by politics. The Strata company essentially said, thanks for the legal clarity, but we're going to vote the problem out of existence.
This is the real power of the Strata company. They are their own little legislative body.
Let's quickly wrap up the last minor claim. The sources call it the flammable fizzle.
A good name for it.
Mrs. Cooper claimed Ms. Crugnail breached a bylaw by storing inflammable materials, paints, weed spray, in a locked common property shed. A fire risk.
This one just fizzled out due to a lack of evidence. Mrs. Cooper had to admit she hadn't actually seen these materials for over a year and a half.
And Mrs. Crugnail disputed it.
She did. She said no flammable items, other than standard vehicle fuel, were currently stored there. Since the applicants couldn't prove the breach was ongoing at the time of the hearing, the claim was dismissed.
So overall, after years of friction, sworn evidence, formal submissions, the application was partly successful.
Right. 2 declarations of past breaches, the caravan and the Airbnb, but 0 active enforcement orders because the issues had either physically resolved themselves
or the community had just changed the rule.
And if we zoom out, this entire dispute, which must have cost thousands in legal fees and years of collective stress, it just highlights that core tension in shared living.
Reconciling personal autonomy with the collective good.
The personal autonomy of owners versus the collective benefit and statutory duties of the Strata company.
It just underscores the difficulty of using rigid, codified law to fix what are fundamentally strained personal relationships.
The tribunal summed that up beautifully in its closing remarks, and I think this is the definitive takeaway from this entire case. They observed that, and I'm quoting, "A codified conduct regime by the declaration of a court is an inadequate substitute for common courtesy and basic goodwill being recognized as the expected standard of behavior between owners."
Wow. That quote should be mounted on the wall of every Strata Council meeting room in the world.
It really should.
So, for you listening, here are the key lessons from this neighborhood war. First, understand those 3 levels of governance power. Simple council approval is often meaningless.
Right. A special resolution can change the rules by majority.
But you need that resolution, without dissent, unanimous approval, to fundamentally change the nature of jointly owned common property.
Second, remember the objective test. The law cares if your behavior is reasonably likely to cause offense, not just if your neighbor felt offended.
That's why the bullshit text wasn't a breach. But the unauthorized parking absolutely was. The legal system can define a breach, but it often can't compel people to simply get along.
This whole case was resolved not by judicial fiat, but by time and internal political votes. It leads us back to that provocative final thought posed by the tribunal itself.
They spent thousands to define the difference between acceptable and unacceptable conduct. So we leave you with this to ponder. If a legal tribunal admits that courts cannot force neighbors to act reasonably or sensibly toward each other,
what do you think is harder to enforce in shared living environments? A clearly written by law or the unwritten law of basic goodwill?
That's the real cost of living together.
Indeed.
We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.